Everyone has nightmares. But for actors, they can take a very different form, because their worst nightmares happen when they are wide awake.
Hi, I'm Luann Moldovan, and welcome to The Actor's Nightmare. We have a great story today, but before we get into it, I want to thank our sponsors who have been so supportive of the show. First, a big shout out to Artists Repertory Theater, Portland's premier regional theater company, producing intimate, provocative shows that provide a home for a diverse community of artists where they can thrive and take risks. Check out their 2019-2020 season at www.artistsrep.org. Also, thanks so much to our patrons, Bob Conklin, and to Len and Susan Magazine and their company, Realestats, providing statistical overviews for residential real estate in Oregon and Washington. Check them out at www.realestats.net. And of course, we are so grateful for the studio at North Rim, where we record our podcast. If you want to do a show, check them out at studioatnorthrim.com. All right, so today we have in the studio is the lovely and amazing, beautiful, wonderful Andrea White.
Nice.
So, no, I don't say that lightly, those things. You are a wonderful actress and a beautiful human being, and I'm so delighted that you're here today.
I'm glad to be here.
Thanks. So I think, I think it's fascinating and interesting about you and your family, that your mother was this very accomplished teacher, started a program, an arts program.
Three performing arts schools she opened over the course of 50 years of being in education.
Wow. Mm. So I did not mean to sound like I was exaggerating, because it's true.
It's true.
So you grew up with this very...
I did. I grew up in the theater, you know. Mm. My mom and dad divorced when I was 3 and a half, mm-hmm. and my mom was a full-time teacher. Drama teacher, English teacher.
Okay.
And I'm an only child. Mm-hmm. And so once they divorced, my dad moved to California. Mm. So my mom was a single mom, mm-hmm. and I spent the better part of my childhood in a theater.
Right.
I can fall asleep between two rows of theater seats to this day,
yes.
at 46.
Oh my God.
And I also, I just was always in the room with all of this happening.
Yeah.
And when I was about 3 and a half, she was directing, or 4, at Mount Tabor Middle School, she was directing Fiddler on the Roof.
Mm-hmm.
And she put me in it because it was easier just to have, like, you know, that all of the eighth graders were fawning over this little kid. And she was like, it's so much easier to just put you in.
And
I loved it.
No babysitter needed.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I loved it. So I was one of the townspeople of Anatevka.
Oh.
And
you were 3?
4, maybe.
Oh, my gosh.
Maybe just 4. And, yeah. And, I mean, you know, I walked around holding somebody's hand, probably. But my grandma's favorite story is I learned about concentration and that you can't, you know, there's a fourth wall and all these,
mm-hmm.
things. So I explained at a family dinner to the family that was coming to the play that they needed to understand that I loved them very much. But when the play was going on, I could not, like, acknowledge them in any way. So I took it very seriously.
Oh, I love it. I can't get up and go over and hug you, because I'm going to be performing.
We have to wait till after.
Right.
Yeah, so.
So it wasn't so much that you were bitten by the bug, but you just were born into it.
I think so. And I love people.
Yeah.
And I love stories. And oftentimes, as I got older, it was that I was just oftentimes confounded by how people worked and why they worked the way that they did. And so then that attracted me to it on a deeper level. Once I got into high school, I found that, and for quite some time, until I was probably about 26,
mm-hmm.
I thought I wanted to be famous. And so I moved off to LA and did all, mm-hmm. of those things for 11 years. And I don't, and now 20 years after that, I just want to be always working,
mm-hmm.
but I don't, it's not for anything other than it's just almost like a study of life.
Exactly.
And it's ongoing,
mm-hmm.
and I feel fortunate that I get to do this,
mm-hmm.
a lot,
mm-hmm.
And that's enough. I mean, I would love to be able to buy a house some point soon, but... Yeah. You know.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, I feel full when I'm
doing
this work.
Yeah, it's fulfilling, not just, it's intellectual, it's deep. It's, you know, the study of the human condition.
You develop empathy in a way that's multi-layered. Mm-hmm. And I've been an obnoxiously curious person, so this is a perfect
me too
art form for
that's
me
right.
to focus my
ask
energy.
All those questions and explore and delve and discover.
Exactly.
It's a very meaningful process.
It is. Mm-hmm. It is. And I think, you know, the actual getting up in front of people is the byproduct of all of the part that really interests me of the work.
Yeah.
And it feels good to, you know, get up and perform when you feel confident and ready. But every time it is time, you know, the curtain speech happens and I'm standing back there and I'm mm-hmm. taking my last breath mm-hmm. before I step out on stage, I do think to myself, what the fuck am I doing? Why am I doing this? Why? What do I don't even know if I know what I'm supposed to do when I get out there. And then I exhale and I step out and then, you know, the thing. But every time.
Wow.
And
it's,
and I don't know why that part happens. But
that
now
questioning
a part of my
and that
process.
Yeah, part of your ritual.
Yeah.
Well, gosh, speaking of that kind of quasi-terror, you did a production on August Wilson. Not your first, though. Is that right?
Well, this was... I've done three August Wilson mm-hmm. productions, but this was the first,
it was your first
of the three.
And it's Radio Golf.
Yes.
And who were you in that?
Mame.
Oh, okay.
The protagonist's wife. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it was a relatively small cast. There's
like five, or, yeah,
five, four men, one woman. Mm-hmm. Yeah. People in the cast. So...
How long had you been running when this occurred, this nightmare?
Well, it was within the first 2 weeks of opening. Okay. So when I was cast in the show, the theater that I was working at had hired somebody from New York mm-hmm. who had, I think, done a show, maybe at Portland Center Stage or something like that.
Okay, had been to town before.
Yes. And they were referred by Portland Center Stage as somebody that would be a good person to play this role.
So vouched for them, basically.
Yes. So so we didn't even know who that was until the day of the first read-through.
Okay.
Which was also the first time, and I know that now that's kind of a thing at theaters, but it was the first time that I went to the first read-through with like 60 people watching. Which is incredibly disconcerting.
Yeah,
I would
it
just
is.
Like to say that for the record for all of the theaters that do
yeah,
that.
It's
like,
right.
It was the first time we're saying this out loud with other people, and, you know, but whatever.
Right, I agree.
So he walked in, mm-hmm. and we all greeted him, introduced ourselves, we sat down, we did the first read-through, and then we started rehearsing, and, you know, it felt as if he played my husband, mm-hmm. and I had a really hard time connecting with him, and it wasn't, I mean, he was gay, so it wasn't that, it wasn't, you know, we didn't have natural, like, attraction to one another.
Okay.
But we're both professional actors.
Sure.
And so then I started getting a complex, because I finally said to him, I'm like, I know I'm not your thing, but I hope I'm not so disgusting that we cannot develop this relationship. And he said to me, I just don't like people touching me. And I said, well, okay.
Oh.
So that was kind of how we started out. And so we very slowly but surely kind of created a semblance of relationship with each other. And he said that I had to, as we were doing this, I had to allow, it was like, it was almost like if you have a stray animal and you're trying to get them mm-hmm. out of a cage or something. So I would just have to just kind of be, and then slowly but surely he would get a little bit more comfortable. Maybe he'd touch my arm. So these were already feeling like insurmountable challenges.
Yeah.
But we worked through it, and we had a decent rehearsal process. He was very gung-ho. And then right before we opened, it started getting weird. Like, and I thought maybe he just was having nerves.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it was something different. It was like his eyes were wild sometimes. Alarmingly wild.
Whoa.
Like he'd turn and look at you and I couldn't put my finger on it.
Wow.
Now, it never occurred to me that it was possibly meth, but that's what was happening.
What?
Yes. So what we found out later.
Oh gosh.
Was that he had been battling a very challenging meth problem. And when this went down, it was like 2007 or 8, Portland was at the height of our meth culture.
Yes.
I mean, like, we even made 60 Minutes. Like,
whoa.
It was like, this is where it's being made.
Yeah, it was
this
ubiquitous.
It was everywhere. So he had been clean and sober for a relatively short amount of time, but then came to Portland.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was like meth mecca.
Oh, my gosh.
So, unbeknownst to the rest of us, he had started dabbling again.
Oh.
And he was staying with donors, right?
Yeah. Oh, God.
That had put him up. So, anyway, we opened. We were almost sold out for the, we extended two or three times, but so we had these packed houses from the very beginning. Sometimes we would be on stage and we would be in a scene.
Yeah.
And then I think he would be so high that he didn't realize he wasn't talking. So he would be making expressions to me and no words would be coming out of his mouth. And so that happened once or twice.
Oh, my God.
And then the final straw where I just was like, we have to all come together as a cast because I can't keep – all my scenes were with him. I was like, I can't keep going out there like this. So one day he wandered away from me.
Oh, on stage?
Yeah, I was delivering a monologue, a very passionate monologue. That he wandered away towards the audience.
What?
He was center stage and he was just staring at the audience.
Oh, my God.
Like scanning them.
What?
And looking, because I traveled with my monologue up to him and I continued talking and kind of got in between he and the audience. He snapped out of it.
Oh.
So that for me was the final straw. I was like, I don't know what I'm going to get when I get out there.
No kidding.
And what he said when we got off stage was, because I got mad at him. I said, what are you doing? And he said, well, good news is it looks like they were enjoying it. And I was just, I left because I had nothing nice to say. So, anyway, jump to the next week.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Thursday night, sold out.
Mm.
We're getting ready. No Harmon. No lead character of the play.
What?
No one's heard from him.
Oh, my gosh.
We called the donors where he was staying.
Yeah.
Turns out that their car had been missing for 2 days.
He
took the car
and
a bunch of baked goods that I think he was supposed to drop off at a fundraiser and then just disappeared.
Oh, my gosh.
And so we had to go and tell the audience that we were canceling the show. A theater that one of the larger
seatings,
right?
Yeah, they have a following.
So they all left with a promise that they could come back. We were going to add a show the following Wednesday.
God.
And we rehearsed somebody in who just stood with a book in the center of the stage. So that for the rest of the weekend, we could do that.
Yeah.
Then he came back and
the next night, you mean?
The next week he got
sorted. He was gone. He never came back the rest of that week.
He called and apologized. I think he connected with the theater company.
Okay.
And they figured out whatever it was they were figuring out. They finally had to let us know that he had a drug problem and that they had known about it for a good 3 weeks prior to when we went through all of those happenings, which was troubling.
Yeah.
But so then the following week, they assured us that everything was okay. It was going to be fine. Everything's pulled together. We said, okay. Again, Thursday night, packed out house, audience is already out there sitting. He comes in and his face was swollen like a honeydew melon. I mean,
what?
It was just, he had, I think, a bad reaction
to some meth.
To some meth. He said, I think he said it was something like a gerbil bite or, I don't know, it was a very bizarre, it was very bizarre and disjointed. So we had to send the audience away again, many of whom were the same people.
From the week before.
My boyfriend's dad was coming to see the show. He tried two times. And both times we had to lose him. So, yeah, that was the adventure, and you just never knew what you were going to get. Like, sometimes he would turn around, and he looked shocked that he was on stage and he was acting. And, like, you know, and he was living the actor's nightmare, I think.
Did he make it through the end of the run?
No. There was another actor who's fantastic, and he had just closed Radio Golf in Cleveland.
Okay.
And he got on an airplane, and he rehearsed one rehearsal.
Wow.
We rehearsed for 6 hours before Friday with another packed out house, and it was seamless. And he was brilliant and wonderful and great and the complete opposite of this other guy.
So it was like the antidote you needed.
It was. But I remember, you know, I love what I do, and very rarely do I ever have a sense of foreboding when I'm lucky enough to go work, right?
Right.
But I you know, I would sit in my car and think about every case scenario. I've started learning, you know, his lines and trying to say, well, what can I do to move the story forward?
Yeah.
He usually loses interest somewhere around page 40.
Geez.
So there's really important information that we're going to need for the end of the day.
I think you were going to say.
So,
Andrea, I mean, I can't imagine the anxiety you must have felt. Because there's one thing about, you know, there are actors who, we never know what we're going to get from so-and-so.
Right,
that's just
right.
The kind of actor he is. He'll never do it exactly the same every night, right?
Right.
But this, that pales in comparison to what...
Yes!
I mean, a drug-altered individual on stage, I don't know how... I don't know. You must have been an anxious mess.
Well, yes, we all were.
Yeah,
you know, even if you exited stage, everyone would just kind of stay, like just in case you might need to go out.
Oh, my gosh.
And meanwhile, here we are, we're saying August Wilson's words.
Yes.
I mean, like, you don't want to change them.
But
there were, you know, there were points where we actually
we're altering, It was like, this is a version of an August Wilson play that we're going to...
Yes, right, yes.
Come experience with this. Yeah, our interpretation.
Actually, I've had some experiences with... I think August Wilson can also be very intimidating. Mm-hmm. I did another production where one of our lead characters just never quite got it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't even mean just the lines, just like the, I think it, and I think as African-American actors, oftentimes, like I learned a lot about the black experience and as it relates to my dad and had a better understanding of my dad and his family, not through him, but through exploring this work. And so I think sometimes for actors, things come up.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And it blocks them off. And,
But see, so there's that, which is so, so elemental to you doing those productions. And there's the, as you said, the sort of intimidation factor. But that aside, Andrea, this was something, from outer space. I mean, to have to do something with someone who's altered like that.
And so altered. And I thought about it because there was one time I was doing a show and I had tooth surgery and I was in so much pain.
God.
And I had 800 milligram ibuprofen and I had Vicodin.
Yeah.
That I was going to take at night when I was there performing. But they were just kind of in a, I don't know why they weren't in their bottles, but they were in like a little pill dish.
Okay.
And I took the wrong one.
Oh, God.
And I had to go perform.
Jeez.
And that feeling of, I mean, I made it through.
Yeah, and you were aware because meth is a different...
That's a different thing. But that feeling of not feeling like you're solid.
Yeah.
And then going and saying other people's words and standing in front of a couple hundred people.
Yeah.
It was the most uncomfortable feeling for me. So I can only imagine when he would sometimes come to and recognize that he was on a stage in front of people that might have been frightening.
Well, I just have to say thank you for sharing a multitudinous actor nightmare tale here. I mean, from many perspectives.
Thanks
and that
for asking.
That was profound. Thanks, Andrea White.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for tuning into The Actor's Nightmare. If you have a story you'd like to share and want to be on the show, it's really easy. Just record it into your phone and send it in an email to actorsnightmarepodcast@gmail.com. And remember to subscribe to The Actor's Nightmare Podcast. You can go to our website at www.actorsnightmarepodcast.com, choose subscribe, and then choose the platform that you like to use to listen to podcasts. Please subscribe if you like what you hear. And again, I want to thank our sponsors, Artists Repertory Theater, Portland's premier regional theater company, and to Bob Conklin, an ardent sponsor of all things theatrical here in Portland. And finally, to Realestats, providing statistical overviews for residential real estate in Oregon and Washington. This is Luann Moldovan. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you next time on The Actor's Nightmare.